Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win!
Ayler's gone! Goodbye, touchdown, Indy!
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Oh, yeah! Welcome into another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio. So glad to have you. We have made it through the midway point of the week, and it's all downhill from here, just so to speak. Glad to have you along. Thanks a lot for joining us, no matter where or how you're finding us, whether it's on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, the Ref, always the right call down in Evansville, the voice of the region, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB, and Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380, the Fan. Keep it locked where you got it. You're in the right place, and if you're following along on social media, just do the deals, you know, hit the subscribe, like buttons, and do the things that help us out immensely. Looking forward to another fun Wednesday show. Dylan Sid will join us after missing a few weeks. Kyle Ned and Rip and K-Bro is in the house today. Rick Bozich off as he is gathering his thoughts and getting everything done after going through his retirement festivities, which I would imagine that's kind of exhausting now that I think about it. But good, and again, good luck to Rick, and really, really happy for him. But we'll still get to see him, maybe not quite as frequently as we did. But welcome into the Hard Truth Distilling Company studio, Sweet Mash Bourbon and Rye, baby. Oh yeah, always. Looking forward to that. And how about the Fever without Caitlin Clark? They win the WNBA in-season tournament, the WNBA Commissioner's Cup. They, without Caitlin Clark, 10.5-point underdogs were playing on the home court of the WNBA's first place team, the Minnesota Lynx. But the Fever still came out on top, 74-59 on Tuesday, taking home the league's in-season championship. They did it with Clark, last season's Rookie of the Year, sidelined for a third consecutive game because of a groin injury. She was watching from the bench at the Target Center, and her teammates gave her a lot of cheer. But, hey, that's good news for the Fever. That's the kind of stuff you love to see from teams coming together during times of difficulty. And I don't know that you could have much more difficulty without your absolute, not just your best player, but one of the best players in the league. So congratulations to them for getting that done. Great job. Hope they continue to have fun success. Coco Gauff is mentally exhausted. She gets upset in the first round at Wimbledon. Number two, Coco Gauff, by the way, became just the third woman in the Open era to lose in the first round at Wimbledon right after winning the championship at the French Open. She was eliminated 7-6, 6-1 by unseeded Dayana Yastremska of Ukraine on Tuesday night. A lot of mistakes, on-court mistakes, finishing with just 6 winners and a total of 29 unforced errors. So we've got Wimbledon going on. Tea and crumpets. Wonder what I bet it's not as hot over there as it is here. Appreciate everybody joining us on the Andy Moore on the hotline. Gritty and the old crew are on there. Mike Shenanigans. Don't forget, go to thehoosier.com. Get yourself a subscription while they have that special, man. $1 for the first month, 50% off first year. You want to know what's going on in IU sports. On3 is the new source. And thehoosier.com with On3. Getting that done, things like new defensive lineman commitment for Indiana football, Cameron McHaney. Indiana has a new football commitment in Cameron Haney from Bradenton IMG Academy. Big-time commitment, defensive lineman. He's got true roots in the Hoosier State. He'll now head to Bloomington to play for Kurt Cignetti. He's a rising senior, picked IU over Vanderbilt and Purdue on Tuesday afternoon. Another win, in-state win of sorts, although I'm considering him an in-state kid, especially since he was looking at Purdue and Indiana in his finalist. I'm heading to IU, McHaney told On3. What really made me choose them is I fit into their scheme very well, and I believe Coach Sig and Coach Pat Coots will put me in the right position to make plays and get me to the next level. The newest Hoosier joins a top 30 recruiting class heading to Bloomington as the fifth in-state native or second Floridian in the group. McHaney took official visits to Vanderbilt, Louisville, and Purdue before wrapping up his month of June in Indiana. It's another win over Louisville. You might want to notice that too. Indiana flipped one of their kids as well. I really didn't know until I went on my visit, and when I got there, I just had a feeling that it was home. I believe it was a big goal to play in the Big Ten, and it's even better to represent my state. Very cool to get to play for the home crowd again. So that's cool. Again, important. This guy wants to be where he is going to be. He's not just landing there. So that's good to see that you still have some of that old, I don't want to sound like the old man yelling at the moon, but old school spirit, so to speak. Not necessarily school spirit, but you know what I mean. You kind of got to believe in whatever it is you're doing. You have to believe in it. I don't care if you're selling soap. You have to believe in it. So congratulations to them. We'll see how that works out. But another good recruit for Indiana. Congratulations. And you open up a little seam with IMG Academy, maybe, recruiting-wise. Especially, he has success. One thing feeds the other. That's how that works. And Indiana is just continuing to do that on the recruiting side on football, slowly building that on the basketball side as well. So there is lots to going on. And you want to talk about football, three Hoosiers named Walter Camp preseason All-Americans. That'll get your blood flowing. That's what you have to have. D'Angelo Pons, of course, Mikhail Kamara, and Elijah Surratt. Surprised that Aiden Fisher was not on there. But Indiana cornerback D'Angelo Pons was named the first team on defense. Senior defensive end Mikhail Kamara and senior wide receiver Elijah Surratt selected to the second team. Indiana joins Alabama, Clemson, Penn State, and Texas as the only programs with three preseason selections. Big Ten is represented by 9 schools and 15 players overall, while the SEC leads all conferences with 16 players from 12 schools. Yeah, I don't know how Aiden Fisher gets left off this list. That would have been a fourth. But look at the company Indiana is keeping right there. Alabama, Clemson, Penn State, and Texas. Those are four of the biggest football programs in this country. I mean, all are top 10, but probably closer to top 7 or 8. Indiana's in that group. That's the kind of talent they have on this team. Indiana is right there, I'm telling you. Now, the difference between Indiana and, say, whomever the best team in the country might be, that will be found out on things like the offensive line. Have they done enough there? So, we'll see. We've got to take a break. Up next, our old friend Dylan Sin joins us from Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. We'll talk more about all this action the football program's been landing in, pulling it in. Back with plenty more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Glad to have you along. We're back with more right after this. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Wednesday. Almost forgot what day it was, Dylan. Dylan Sin joins us from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. How are you, my friend? How have you been? I'm not sure you can hear me. There you go.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you for having me on. As always, I've been great. Happy to be back with you.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. And before we get too deep, man, I saw a very unique story coming out of Minneapolis. Nothing good comes out of that Target Center. Ever since they started, they had the Big Ten Media Days there those couple times. Boy, it's just been getting the brush off. But now they've went and done it. They have injured one of the most popular people in all of America, the Red Panda. The Red Panda is on the DL, people. The popular halftime performer known as Red Panda was injured at the start of her performance at the WNBA Commissioner's Cup Championship between the Indiana Fever, Minnesota Lynx, which I just talked about the Fever winning at the Target Center on Tuesday. No update was given on her condition, although a WNBA source said after the game that she was taken to a hospital for evaluation. I've never known her real name. Red Panda, the stage name for acrobat Rong Niu, rides a unicycle that sits 8 feet above the ground, balances bowls on her head, and all kinds of crazy stuff. She is known throughout the sports world. If you've ever been to a basketball game, with any regularity, IU game, they have her every year. She makes more appearances than officials. I mean, she's everywhere, man. Everywhere. But let's see, what happened to her? She fell off of her unicycle and appeared to injure her wrist, along with being generally shaken up. She got up to try to walk off the court, but then she kneeled back down. Medical personnel tended to her and then brought out a wheelchair to take her off the court. She did not appear to ever lose consciousness. So I hope she's all right. Maybe some bruised pride. Can you imagine how often she does that act and does it flawlessly? That's almost incredible to not make mistakes with the amount of time she does that, because she's somewhere every daggone night.
Yeah, she is everywhere. It's been years that she's been coming to IU games, and we've been seeing her around. So for her to take a fall like that, very, very scary. We hope she's okay. It was very scary for the people in that arena, but hopefully she's okay, and she can get back up on the unicycle pretty soon here.
Yeah, even Sydney Colson was doing an Instagram live after the game, I think, and Caitlin Clark stepped in to say, "Red Panda, we love you." So, I mean, she saw Red Panda. Well, she probably didn't see her, but knew about her from her days playing in Iowa, because I will guarantee you she was at Iowa all 4 years. She is in Indiana. Man, you want to talk about, boy, I'd like to know how much money the Panda makes. Busy.
And her act has evolved over the years. She has made it crazier with more bowls over the years. It's been bigger and better over, as the years have progressed here. So hopefully she can get back out there pretty soon.
Absolutely. The Pacers, it's kind of shaking things up, man. Miles Turner, we thought that they were going to try to get him signed and get him back, but off he goes to Milwaukee. And then Milwaukee releases Damian Lillard. I don't know how that's going to work, but a lot of chatter going on out there about that. What's Indiana going to do? Now what the hell is Milwaukee going to do?
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me is I don't think that makes Milwaukee that much better, right? Like I understand the idea of signing Miles Turner. It, for them, is getting a rebounder and someone to help out Giannis in the post, right? Like, so he doesn't have to do so much work on defense. He can kind of they can save some wear and tear on him. But I just it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. He's 33. I guess they're going all in for like 1 or 2 years. And I also don't think that this is going to keep them from losing Giannis, because apparently Giannis was not happy with them releasing Damian Lillard the way they did. So just kind of an odd situation there. And then for the Pacers, it felt like they were going to re-sign Turner and go from there. And then he kind of leaves pretty suddenly. And there's been conflicting reports about how much they offered him and how much more they could have offered him without going well into the luxury tax and the aprons and all of that. But it is losing a foundational player, first and foremost. Like, Miles Turner has been an Indiana Pacer for 10 years. He was one of the better centers in the league for a good portion of that. And he had some struggles in the playoffs this year, but that's a guy who, if he had stuck around for a couple more years, might have ended up getting his number retired in Indiana. And now I don't think that's going to happen, because I think there are a lot of bruised egos out there from not only leaving the Pacers, but going to a team that you faced in the playoffs the last 2 years, kind of thumbing your nose at them just a little bit.
Yeah. The big question, Giannis Antetokounmpo to Indianapolis? Question mark. I don't know that they can afford him.
I don't think they can. I'd be shocked.
Boy, what would that do? But how much difference would that make? I mean, would that really elevate the Pacers enough? They're not going to have Tyrese Halliburton next season. Right. So even with Giannis, I just don't know, because he just finished playing with Damian Lillard. So, and they got it handed to him by the Pacers.
Yeah, I don't think that is possible. I mean, I guess the other one is, can you get DeAndre Ayton on a cheaper contract, right? Like, that he's out there as a replacement center. Like, that would be the other option. The one that I was thinking about was, is there it's much less possible now because he signed his deal, but what would it take? What would Indiana have to give up to get LeBron from the Lakers for 1 year to basically make a run while Halliburton's out, and then LeBron retires and Halliburton comes back? What would they have to give up to get that? That's kind of what I've been turning over in my mind, because he very clearly wants to. He doesn't really want to be with the Lakers anymore. It sounds like he signed his deal and now he's hoping they'll trade him. That's kind of the impression I got by from the statement he put out about wanting to compete for a championship while knowing the Lakers are building for the future. So how much would Indiana have to give up to get him, and could they afford him? That is kind of what I've been turning over in my mind, but we'll have to see.
Hey, just a note, red ripe tomatoes starting to roll in. Just kidding. That came from Robert. Yeah, the Pacers have been built on they're a team that while they have stars, they don't really have this quote unquote superstar. Tyrese Halliburton may be on his way to that. Not sure he's there just yet, but they've not been built on guys that are, you know, each year you're hearing about, well, he doesn't want to be here and this, that, disgruntlements. That's been a pretty happy group. I don't think that they want to bring in any of that kind of discontent to the mix, because that's part of their mix, is having a camaraderie, having a team that plays together, having a team that plays as a team, which is kind of, you know, unusual in the NBA.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that really was kind of their signature in these playoffs was, I mean, the offensive system, this is why I think Halliburton is so valuable, frankly, was their offensive system was built around ball movement to such an extent, and he is such a huge, huge piece of that. And honestly, I'm curious as to how that goes next year without him. Like, obviously, yes, there's going to be they're going to be a decent team next year. I think they have enough of that roster back, especially if Benedict Mathurin takes a step as a full-blown starter, which I think he might. I think he's a very, very talented player. But Halliburton to such an extent really ran that offense and got everyone where they were supposed to be. That's why I think he's so incredibly valuable, and he made that system work. To me, that is a huge, huge, obviously it's huge that he's injured, but to me, he is one of the more valuable players in the league, and having that system without him, I'm just curious as to how that goes, because he was able to run that team in a way that so few other teams in the NBA are run now without what you would call a superstar. But then, obviously, he's so valuable. Does he enter that tier to me? I'm curious about how that goes without him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, because it's hard to rebound from a season like you just had, going into it knowing that you're so damaged and you're having to do damage control. So hopefully it's going to be interesting to see what they can do to stay in that mix. But now the key is they're going to pick somebody up. Who is that going to be? Are they working on something big? Do they have something going on the way that Miles Turner was allowed to get away? That tells me that you don't do that unless you're IU 25 years ago. You don't blow up your house without a rebuild plan. Not that they're blowing up the house per se, but it's like when Indiana fired Bob Knight. If you're going to slay the dragon, you better have a plan for after that. Indiana didn't. Now, letting Miles Turner go, I'm thinking, all right, they have to have somewhat of a plan. I know you can't have definitive plans because they're all fluid, but they have to be, they had to have, you know, something in their, what they're thinking, where they're going.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so they offered Turner somewhere between 20 and 25 million over the next 3 years. Right. So now that is a space available that you do have that you can spend. So they need someone to play center. I don't know who that's going to be. I don't think they're going to have Thomas Bryant be the starting center next year. As much as we like Thomas Bryant here on this show, I don't think he is going to be the starting center next season. So who can you get at that price point? I really don't know. The options are not great at center. I mentioned DeAndre Ayton. I don't know if you can get him for that. I don't know if you'd want him for this team. He hasn't played particularly well the last couple of years, but he might be the best of several bad options if you can get him for that price. I think he probably is looking for more than what the Pacers plan to offer, but we'll have to see. And beyond that, the options are not great. So yeah, I guess it is a question of, did you think that you were going to be able to get Miles Turner back at that price point? Was it a surprise that he left for you? Did he leave kind of on a dime, or was it something that he had telegraphed to the management for like a week or so that they could formulate a plan? Because it seemed to me that most people assumed he was coming back. And then he kind of just signs immediately somewhere else. And it's like, okay, did they know this was coming? And if not, like you said, what is the plan? Because obviously they had to have some kind of backup plan. They weren't for sure he was going to sign, but all indications seemed to be that they were going to try to get a deal done. So now the question is, where can you go with some options that aren't great? You don't want to lock anyone down long-term, I would guess, because you want to preserve flexibility for when Halliburton's back in 26-27, if he doesn't come back next year. So we'll see how that goes, because it's a difficult situation, because you're trying to build for the future while also not totally sacrificing next season, I think. I think you'd rather at least try to do something next year in the hope that maybe you can get to the playoffs and Halliburton can come back and help you win in an Eastern Conference that is not expected to be very good. So we'll have to see, but it is a really tricky situation they're in because of Halliburton's injury on top of everything else.
FYI, Five Left thinks you're looking like a little like a young Tom Crean without glasses, by the way.
Well, I appreciate that. Young Tom Crean was a handsome fellow, so I will take that and feel very good about it.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say that's not bad. I mean, it could have been a lot worse.
I've been called worse, you know. So.
At least it wasn't Carrot Top or something that's like right. that. We'll certainly see, but yeah, man, the Pacers and now the Fever have things going. Winning that interleague tournament, the Commissioner's Cup, without Caitlin Clark against the current top team in the WNBA, I don't know how the hell they did that. Yeah. But that is a tremendous sign for them going forward, because that gives that team all kinds of confidence without Caitlin Clark. There's nothing worse than a team that not has a superstar, but just relies on that superstar. Again, talked about the Pacers all year long, how it was somebody different every night. And with them, hell, you didn't know how many different guys it was going to be. 6, 7. It could be 7 different guys that were the leading scorer for them. If Caitlin Clark's in the game for the Fever, she's going to be the leading scorer. It's just such a huge difference. But for them to do this without her, against who they did it against, that's on the road at their place. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that reflects at least in part that something that's kind of gone under the radar for the Fever this year is that, and I think she's going to get her flowers here as the season goes on, but Aaliyah Boston is becoming a star in this league. I think people kind of assumed she was going to be, like, for all the Caitlin Clark hype, they remember they had the number one pick 2 years in a row, and the previous year they took Aaliyah Boston, who was a dominant force in college basketball at South Carolina, and it took her a couple of years to really, really get her game to where she wants it to be, but she has been fantastic this year. Probably one of the 15 best players in the league, if not one of the 10 best, and as Clark has struggled with some injury and with some shooting inconsistency, she has really carried the load a lot of nights for this team. And so you're seeing now a team that has not just one, but two stars. I'm not saying that she is the best player on the team, because I still think that Clark, when she's out there, it is so valuable in what she can do as a passer and a floor spacer. But the fact that they are able to kind of continue on without her is a testament to having a true star on the team outside of her, and Aaliyah Boston has become that in her third year in the league. It's really, really impressive.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch. Hey, we've got to take a quick break. We've got the great Dylan Sin with us from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. You should be a subscriber if you're one of our great Fort Wayne listeners, by the way. Keep local papers alive. And the great – are you the only sports reporter? I'm sure there's other sports reporters, right? But maybe not a lot for that paper, but – or are you it?
Yeah, we have three sports reporters at our paper. I cover colleges. We have a high school reporter, and we have a professional reporter for all the pro teams in Fort Wayne. So we have our bases covered, and I think we do a pretty good. If I may say so myself, I think we do a pretty good job of covering sports.
And you may say so yourself.
A very comprehensive look at what's going on. Well, there we go. That's why I'm out here. I do appreciate that.
Absolutely. Well, and you know, you guys got the entire northwest corner of the state. I mean, that's a big chunk of area, because you go down below that. What's the Fort Wayne like TV market south around? How far south does it go?
Yeah, we go all the way out to Adams County. We go to Wells County. We're all the way out there.
Give me some cities, man. This is not Kentucky.
Yeah, like, we go to Bern. We go to Monroeville. We go all the way out to Whitco and things like that. Like we
bigger cities. Anderson, past Anderson, past Muncie.
Not quite there. We only do the northeast corner. We cover 40 high schools, so we cover schools that are about an hour away. So we get out and cover Adams Central and South Adams and Whitco and
you guys have probably do you all cover anything from just across the border in Ohio?
So we used to, but we don't anymore. Just because we really wanted to focus on Indiana, and we didn't have a ton of subscribers there anymore. But I understand why people would think that. But we really wanted to focus on Indiana. But we do all the way out to like Heritage, which is all the way out there. So we're working on it.
Fred with the comment of the day said there's a higher probability the Pacers sign Jim Coyle before signing LeBron James, and that's a fact. That probably happened. Hey, we've got Dylan Sin with us. Lots more coming to you from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Glad to have you along. We're back with plenty more. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Wednesday. So glad to have you along as you've made it to the halfway point. It's all downhill from here, man. A lot of baseball going on. I know you got a lot of tin caps action going on up there. Baseball everywhere. And before I forget, all right, you don't have to live near Chicago, but I have got in my possession 4 passes for the 3-day event, Windy City Smokeout, that's going to be at the in the parking lot area of the United Center. But this is a 3-day concert extravaganza. I've got 4 wristbands for each day that I will give away to anyone that is a subscriber to thehoosier.com. All you got to do is send me a message. Your name goes in. But this is coming up soon. It's July. It's in 10 days, people. So a week from this weekend. But I don't want that to go to waste. Bailey Zimmerman, Coe Wetzel, let's see, Kane Brown, Megan Maroney, several others on each day. John Party, Riley Green, Ella Langley. A lot of names I recognize, but there you go. All you got to do is send me a message and let's put your name in that. And we'll get that going. Any golf events? Do you play golf, by the way?
I do play golf. Not well, but I play. I played in high school, and so I try to get out as much as I can.
Well, that playing in high school is huge. I recently took my first lesson of my life.
Wow.
I waited way too long. No idea why. But after all these years, I finally got sick of sucking. Golf is a very, very humbling sport. And all of you that play understand that it's one of those games that is, all you have to be off is a fraction every time. And now sometimes it's not fractions, it's very chasms that I'm off, but it's wild though how it's a humbling game, because it doesn't matter if you're tall, you don't have to be a big weightlifter guy. There are guys that are skinny, short, overweight, doesn't matter. It's about technique. It's just one of those things. It's about technique, and you can get away with. But my man,
What did they tell you at the lesson? Like, what was the big thing they tried to have you improve on?
Take 2 weeks off and quit.
That might be good advice.
I'm kidding. That's my favorite line. No, I was really getting my head over the ball. Just two more. And so when anytime I was rotating, it was causing too much up and down movement with my torso. So just completely lifted my head up as high as I could get it. And my posture as high, as straight as I could get it. And it made an instant difference on certain clubs. But I haven't had the time to practice. It's either been too hot or raining, so you can't go practice anything. And now, so I played yesterday in a little nine-hole thing. But, you know, when you try to incorporate that in all of the different clubs, that's very difficult. When you haven't practiced it, we're talking something completely new, and you're doing it in the moment. Yeah. So still stink, but you know, I got that going for me, which is nice. So yeah. There's that little Caddyshack reference, one of the greatest movies of all time. I don't consider that a sports movie, really. It's sure. You know, it's about golf, but it doesn't really have anything to do with golf. It's just about a great comedy. One of the first movies I saw as a kid in the one of the first movies I remember going to the theater to see, me and one of my best friends, Kurt and I, when I was a kid. I remember seeing that down in Jeffersonville. His mom was working at Sears. That's how old this day was. She was working in the Sears catalog department, but dropped us off middle afternoon. We'll go watch a movie, have a blast. Can you imagine two 13-year-old kids going in to watch Caddyshack?
I was gonna say that's a little bit, that's a lot for a 13-year-old. There's a lot going on in that movie.
Perfect. It was perfect, and those lines have been stuck in everybody's heads forever. You know, the greatest sports movie of all time, of course, is Hoosiers, but there are only a couple of lines out of that movie that are, you know, that you kind of can repeat all the time. Caddyshack is full of them. No, 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 no. Well, you got that going for you, which is nice. Just gunga galunga. You could just quote the whole stupid thing. Cannonball, cannonball. How do you not love that movie? And still today, how do you not love it?
Yeah. Oh, that's the worst hat I've ever seen. Oh, it looks good on you, though.
There you go. What, you get a free bowl of soup in this? Oh, it looks good. He was hilarious in that. Yo, Wang, you think this club is restricted, so don't tell him you're Jewish. The guy was obviously an Asian American, so that stuff just didn't make sense. It was funny. Ted Knight, oh, my goodness. And the thing is that I have the reading I've done about it, the movie over the years, is it was a party. Yes. Think about, these were Chevy Chase and all these people, and the director was a young Harold Ramis who did Animal House and all these kinds of, and that's the kind of set it was. And Ted Knight was apparently a, you know, serious actor, and he didn't fancy all the partying that was going on. You can imagine, because what you see, I think, is exactly what the hell was going on in the making of that movie.
Judge Smales was indeed trying to keep it on the rails, even off screen.
Judge Smales, Dr. Beeper, Lacey Underall. I was talking yesterday, speaking of movies, one of my other favorites, Once Upon a... No. Oh, Snatch. Have you ever seen the movie Snatch?
Yeah, with the boxing movie, right? With Brad Pitt.
Yes, yeah. Well, it's oh my God. Just the names of the characters. I was watching it again a couple of days ago, and I told this to, I think it was Mike DeCourcy. I stopped it afterwards when the credits were rolling by, because just the name of the characters on this one page, I stopped. You had Bullet Tooth Tony, Boris the Blade, Four Fingers Frankie, gee whiz, I can't even remember them all. They were just incredible. I'm like, just look at these names. Great, but great movie.
Get a little movie for you. There's some movies for you. If you haven't seen Snatch, I'm telling you, you need to watch it. You will.
That's early Jason Statham, right? Like, one of the first films that he did, I think. That's 25 years ago now. That's crazy.
Dennis Farina's in it. Brick Top, Turkish. Jason Statham, he's Turkish. There you go. That's another. He goes, kind of an odd name for an Englishman, Turkish. But yeah. Hey, speaking of, I forget what I was going to segue that with. It was going to be good, but I lost it. Indiana football. How about three preseason Walter Camp All-Americans, and it does not include Aiden Fisher.
Yes. One of five teams. Only five teams in the country had three.
And not just that. Those other four, I mentioned this a minute ago. Alabama, Clemson, Penn State, Texas. There are not four programs hardly. You know, there's a handful of programs that sit in that group with all the resources they have, all the accomplishments. Every one of those are national champions. Every one of those are in the elite level of college football and have been for quite some time. Penn State might be the only one that hasn't played for a national championship in the last 10 years.
Yeah. Can't remember. And I think that, like, looking at, like, my assumption has been for the last couple of months is that Texas, Clemson, Penn State, one of those three teams is going to win the national championship this year. That's been my guess for the last couple of months. So all three of those on that list, along with IU, is really, really impressive. And like you said, I think that's part of it too. Like you said, that doesn't include Aiden Fisher, who was an All-American himself last year. So it really is impressive. Elijah Surratt getting that recognition is really good, because
I'm surprised he has not gotten a little more than he's gotten.
That's what I'm saying, is that I think he deserves more than he's gotten. I think he was a huge, huge piece of that team last year, especially late in the season. And for him to be recognized that way, I think it's a little bit overdue. I thought he should have gotten more recognition than he did at the end of last season. And so I do think he is one of the better receivers in college football. I think he will be up there when all is said and done this year. So really impressive. Obviously, D'Angelo Pons, the honors keep rolling in for him. I think everyone expects him to be one of the two or three best cornerbacks in the country this year, which is crazy for a guy who was so under-recruited at James Madison, and then came here, was immediately a star at James Madison, came to IU, was immediately a superstar, and now is going to be one of the best corners in the league and probably go in the first 50 picks of the draft next year. It is really, really impressive what he's done. And then Mikhail Kamara, just a guy who, again, had a chance to go elsewhere, had a chance to go to the NFL, and came back to IU. And the joke that Chris Signetti has made is that he was not cheap, but IU ponied up and made sure to keep him, and is going to turn him loose at a slightly new position this year. So very excited to see what he is able to bring to that defensive front. I think that is what makes me so bullish on Indiana's offense, is that it has an All-American level player, if you include Aiden Fisher, an All-American level player at all three levels of that defense. You got Fisher at the linebacker core and Pons. Yeah, it's anchors, hard to beat. It really is.
I've asked that question. How many teams have what I call the triple crown anchor, linebacker and defensive backfield? Very few teams.
It's not are going to have very that. Few.
Maybe less than this five, less than five. And that would be very, very impressive. And not only do I think that Elijah Surratt, like you've talked about, is going to have an outstanding season this year, because it's hard to say this without sounding like Curtis Rourke was not spectacular last year, because he was nothing short of spectacular without the torn ACL. And without not having the greatest of lines in the league. But this year they've upgraded the line, and I think they've upgraded the running backs room a little bit. The wide receivers room is, I don't know, it's probably even to what it was last year.
I mean, and Cooper and Surratt, the top two being the same. That is one of the better duos in the Big Ten.
In the country, too.
Yep.
And I'm going to say that Mendoza will be more successful only because he has some mobility, which will allow him to keep some things alive sometimes, will make things more difficult to for defenses to cover him. And he threw for over 3,000 yards while getting sacked 41 times. So it's going to be, and he's got a hell of a deep ball. So Indiana's offense is going to be more threatening this year from both running game protection and a deep ball. And the defense should be where it was. That's why I'm confident in this team being better than they were last year.
Yeah, the idea of IU having all of that star power is just crazy. It really is. I mean, even going into last year, the idea was they're going to be a good team because they just have so many guys who are competent. They brought in so many guys who were competent last year, and then it turned out a lot of those guys were way better than competent. They were stars, and then to keep almost all of them this year is, and add a couple more on top of it, is just so impressive for what this program has done. I mean, we've said it a million times, but just the level, the manner in which they have gone about upgrading the talent in this program in basically a year and a half running the show is just one of the best coaching jobs in college football in the last decade. It really, really is impressive.
It is crazy because not just the coaching change, all of the assistants, and when you talk about the number of people, of personnel we're talking about, it's crazy. Look at the list that IU basketball just put out. 8 people. That didn't even include some of the ones that had already been announced. So look at the amount of personnel they're talking about. So double that. Maybe not quite triple, 2.5 times that for football. The numbers are just incredible. But yeah, it's they have just done an unbelievable job, and they have really turned the in-state recruiting around quickly, just with the commitment of the kid from IMG that's originally from Indianapolis
Lutheran. Yeah, Cam McKinney is his name. Yeah, he went to Indianapolis Lutheran for a couple of years. He won a couple of state championships with them because they were a power in class 2A, I believe, or class A. And so they are up there now in 2A, I believe. So
what is up next for you, sir?
Yeah. So I have, I'm doing a series this month and early in July and June as well on, roster resets, basically. So all of the teams I cover, IU basketball, Purdue basketball, PFW basketball, and then football, on just kind of, okay, the portal season is over. What exactly happened? Who's new on the team? What does the roster look like? I'm doing a series on those. I have 2 of those coming out every week. This week is Purdue Fort Wayne, but check them all out at journalgazette.net. So that is what I am focused on here in the coming weeks, and I'm looking forward to that.
Appreciate you as always, my friend. Looking forward to next week, and we shall talk to you soon.
Absolutely, Jim. Thanks for having me on, as always.
Pleasure. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. Make sure you're following and subscribing. If you're a Fort Wayne area resident, keep local papers alive. Back with plenty more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Wednesday. So happy to have you along with us. I hope your day is going well, and we appreciate you for spending some of your time with us. Man, there are so many golf events coming up. A friend, Dan Dockich, he's has an event that's on July 14th. That benefits bikes for kids there in central Indiana. Then a week after that, our friend Bob Kravitz has the Indiana ALS Golf Classic at the Golf Club of Indianapolis. Actually, both of those events going on at the same course, so that makes it easy. Those are both in July, and Cheryl Sizemore, our good friend, this one is at Bluff Creek golf course. It's the 2025 Meredith Knepper Memorial Scholarship. I hope I said that name right. Saturday, August 23rd. I love how these are all in on different days of the week. I've always wondered, what is the best day of the week for a golf scramble? Because they're coming, you know, at us heavy right now. But different days. Mondays, Never Lose Hoop is usually on a Thursday. Dan's is on a Monday. I believe that Bob Kravitz is also on a Monday. Probably Monday's not bad because it's a day of the week you can not a lot going on, although it seems like it's kind of that would be a tough day getting back at it the beginning of the week. But it works. But that's a great conversation to have, is what is the best day to have a golf scramble? Mondays, Thursdays are probably the two bigger during the week. I'm going to guess Saturdays not as much, but probably up there, but because golf courses don't want to do events on Saturdays because they already have a lot of stuff going on. So there's no point in adding more to it. Daggone it, I got the registration up there again. But they've got dinner, there's a beverage cart. They've got all kinds of stuff going on for that event that you can be a part of. Then I've got the Peggy Sherrill Memorial, which I won't even put the information up for that one. That thing gets sold out before it even goes out. That's down in Southern Indiana, in my area. Peggy Sherrill, someone actually I went to high school with, is a year older than me, but her daughter has put this on for a long, long time. She does such a great job at putting that scramble on that's been going on for 15 years. She benefits epilepsy. Unfortunately, her mother passed away from an epileptic fit seizure. But the Epilepsy Foundation loved what she was doing so much, they hired her. That's when you know you're doing some good stuff, is when the benefit that you're working for hires you away. Yeah, that's the deal. And so, and then Never Lose Hoop. And there seems like there's one other that I'm missing. That Never Lose Hoop is in August as well, so we're not quite as close to that one just yet. But if you're a golfer, man, here's a way for you to benefit charities, and it's a tax deduction, and have fun. For Never Lose Hoop, let me ask you this. I'm thinking of an idea. What is 500 divided by 3? I know it's not going to be an even number, so that always stinks, but it is what it is. Get my little calculator open here. 500 divided by 3 equals $167. So would you rather pay, if you were playing in the Never Lose Hoop event, would you rather pay $125 bucks a man in a foursome? Or would you bump that up about $40 and pay $167 for a threesome with a celebrity like Todd Leary, who's a great golfer? Mitchell Page, great golfer. So I think I'm going to suggest that we add that this year, that option. If you can choose to have one of the celebrities on your team, which it's an extra $40, and they're good. Plus IU athletes or former coaches, whatever we can get. But great. Let me pat myself on the back. That's a great idea. I like that. But it's all for charity. Never Lose Hoop benefits families that have children that have dealt with cancer. So all of these great benefits. The one for Cheryl that I am failing to pull up, which it's driving me insane. And I'm going to try one more time to get that thing pulled up. There we go. The Meredith Memorial Scholarship, Meredith Knepper, 2025, Saturday, August 23rd. It's a 1 p.m. shotgun start at Bluff Creek Golf Course. I'm not sure. That's in Greenwood. So we're on the south side there. There's the event contacts. And if you need any more, I'll post this stuff so you can see it all. And boom, you can have a great summer playing golf and supporting some great great causes. And Cheryl has been involved in things like this since I've known her, and we greatly appreciate her and anything we can do. We're there. Appreciate it. It's trying to get caught up on the comments. How about Indiana? I've talked about how their talent level is not what some of these other programs is. And that's not quite true. The depth of their talent level is not what some of these other programs are. Obviously, Indiana is in company that most teams are not in. They've got three All-Americans on defense. They have All-Americans on both sides of the ball. This is not your grandpa's Indiana team. Not that you need me to tell you that after what, you know, has happened, what happened last year. But the thing is, there was no resting on laurels. It was hitting the ground running better than the year before, taking advantage of every single thing that they gained, every bit of momentum that they gained from last year. And they've done a hell of a job at it in recruiting. They have flipped the state. The state of Indiana for state schools now belongs to Indiana. It took one year to make that flip. Now, can that always flip back? Oh, yeah. What's Purdue going to be like? I'm going to have to get one of the On3 Purdue guys on here soon. Purdue is going to be better. How much improvement can they make year over year? Barry Odom, good coach, came in. Obviously, Ryan Walters was a, whew, boy, you want to talk about, that was an Archie Miller-esque, maybe worse than Archie Miller hire. The difference, Purdue didn't sit on their ass for 4 years watching crap. They said, yeah, done, over it. I've had enough. I've seen what I need to see. Got to go. Exactly. When I hear people say, oh, no, you got to give them 4 years. Bull crap. You can see when things are not going in the right direction. It doesn't matter the sport, because there are so many telltale signs. There are so many things that a lot of people don't have the opportunity to know about, don't have the opportunity to see, or just aren't educated enough to understand what those differences mean. When I have a lot of the opinions I have, it's based mostly on information that most people know, but there's probably stuff that maybe I know or think about that others don't. Just the general fan, I mean. And so that's why I develop the opinions I develop. I say what I see with Indiana football has been nothing but positive for the last 2 years, because that's what I've seen and that's what I am seeing. Basketball, I don't need to tell you. But where it's going right now, I'm like, okay, I'm not jacked up about this season for thinking Indiana's going to go out and just shock the world at all. I think they're going to have to overachieve. Indiana basketball is going to have to overachieve next season, in my opinion, just from what I think. But the one thing I have learned also, especially when it comes to basketball, you got to be careful what your expectations are, because the changes year over year are massive now. The change per team. Now, Florida was not a shock to win the national championship last year after the year they had before that. But you see, if they don't lose a lot and if they gain, how that plays into that. Purdue basketball, I've got a great understanding of what they have, because we know what they have and we know that they've added some really good parts. Michigan, same thing. We know what they had and we know that they've added some good parts. They're going to be at the top. I really just am pretty convinced of that. But who's going to join them? Illinois could. I don't know what they're going to be like. Talked about it immensely. UCLA, I'm not covering those teams in-depthly at the moment. I don't know what they're going to be like just yet. And a lot of times, until the season starts now, you don't know. We don't know about this Indiana team. They could come out and shock a lot of us. I still think they will overachieve if they do that, because I don't think that they have what I would call elite level talent, but I also think that they have something similar to what Kurt Cignetti had in his first year. Guys that people are just, on. Well, guess what? Give people an opportunity and they can surprise you a lot of time. They can shock you a lot of the time. And all of these guys are getting opportunities they have not had before, with the exception of the kid from Florida. These guys are all coming in from mid-majors. They're not, success has been at a muted level, so to speak. But they're all hungry. They're all wanting that chance. They all know that they get the opportunity to play in the Big Ten, to play at Indiana, to play against some of the best teams in the country. And they have the chance. That's all you can offer. Effort goes a long way. Teams that do what they're supposed to do, don't make mistakes, they go a long way. They can do plenty. Hey, we're going to take a break. Up next, you know him, you love him, you cannot live without him. That's right. There he is, if you're watching on YouTube. K-Bro joins us next from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Wednesday. And as promised, you know him, you love him, you can't see him, but it's K-Bro. Kevin Brockway joins us live from Gainesville, Florida. Surf's up, brother. Surf's up.
Last day before vacation, so I'm looking forward to it.
Where are we headed?
Well, I'm going to go down to Orlando for a few days for 4th of July weekend, and then from there, going to go up to New York, going to do a little trip to D.C. and Baltimore, maybe catch the Mets and the Orioles. I've never been there. I've never been to Camden, so I'm going to take that in. And maybe
making
have
the rounds, little, brother, making the rounds
some,
up the
had some crabs on the Inner Harbor, that kind of stuff,
What you have the crabs? What?
No, soft shell crabs.
Oh,
very good. Yeah,
you
ever been to an apple?
Crab cakes and socks. That's what we do.
Have you ever been to Annapolis or no?
In the Annapolis? Yeah, I've been in the Annapolis.
The real Annapolis.
Oh, in the Annapolis. Yeah, don't you remember that commercial?
Yeah.
In the Annapolis. Yes, I've never been to Maryland. That's one of the few states in this country I have never been to. Never been to Baltimore, never been to Maryland, I've never been to Delaware.
When Indiana played the Terps, they sent me there once, and that was a fun road trip. It's nice to see people sing, but that college
that arena is
very nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to going over there at some point.
You should. Yeah.
For Maryland. Well, I haven't been to Maryland yet, and I haven't been to Penn State yet. I will probably take care of Penn State this year. And you know what? Maryland, the football game is on the road as well over there. So possibility of
Lito's Pizza, very good pizza on campus. That's a good place. I forget Gable's they have a bar with Boomer Esiason's jersey.
Do you get a ring from the national championship? Do you give them your ring size?
Yeah. I've covered three of them. I'm good luck for these guys.
You covered two of their others. Yeah, they're back to backs.
They should be thanking me every day. I mean, I've covered their College World Series championship in 2017. I covered their UF's the 08 BCS championship game I was there for against Oklahoma. So Kevin Wolfson was the offensive coordinator for the Sooners at the time.
Ah, right before he came to Indiana.
Very, very cocky guy, because I was assigned to cover Oklahoma that week.
And kidding. You don't say.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was known for that. That's anytime Kurt Cignetti is such a difference in this category, because 99 times out of 100, if a coach would have acted the way he acted at where he was, people would just either tune him out, think you're a nut job, total disrespect. But that didn't happen, because to me, for one thing, you could tell it was coming from a serious place. But then, of course, he went out and stuck it right up and in everybody's ear by doing it. And they have continued to do it. They're recruiting. They have taken over in-state recruiting. They have flipped several guys from Illinois, from Louisville. The recruiting is continuing to progress. I was just talking about the fact that Indiana has three Walter Camp preseason All-Americans. Do you know how many teams have that? Five. Do you know how many who the other teams are? Alabama, Clemson, Penn State, and Texas. That's the company Indiana is in, that they just don't have the depth that these other schools are that I just mentioned.
What's their team ranking right now, 24/7 Sports?
Well, we go by On3, but...
Oh, by On3, yeah. Because On3, I think, has Florida in like the 10 to 15 range now. How many commitments do they have? Florida has 14 right now.
They have a top 30 recruiting class that could still improve into a top 25 class. They're waiting on...
That's pretty darn good for, obviously, where they were. And what Cignetti has done has been, nothing short of... unbelievable, like masterful job there. How he turned that, program around in 1 year to get it, where it was. But very confident guy with a lot of experience, obviously. Guy that comes from football bloodlines, right? His father was a coach at West Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
So he's been around it. I mean, this is his life.
He coached under Saban, but still one of my favorite lines of all time. Last year when college game day came and Kurt was telling Saban, I learned so much from him. And really, well, I can tell you one thing you didn't learn from me, all that beep you talk. That was great. He said the S word.
Florida has tried a number of Saban assistants over the years that have not certainly did not pan out,
Well, here's the ironic thing. Here's the Saban assistant who went off to obscurity of sorts.
Yeah.
Virtually working in anonymity, doing the job that he's done. Most coaches are on this mental fast track of trying to get to where they're trying to get to as fast as they can get to. Kurt Cignetti didn't even ever think about that. He stayed at Indiana, Pennsylvania for a while. He moved to Elon. He was at James Madison. That's the amazing thing. And so his entire football career, the best 10 years of his entire career will come in the last portion of his career. Yeah. That usually doesn't happen. There's usually a middle and then a fade off. He's been kind of just here and then slowly rising, and he's still doing it. It reminds me of what was the Breaking Bad? That was a show that just started off and just had an upward trajectory until the day it went off the air. That's what I see under this program under Kurt Cignetti. They have just been on a slow trajectory, rising, and it has not stopped yet. It's still rising.
Yeah, no, and like you said, you know, he obviously was taking notes when he worked under Saban, because a lot of those principles are showing on the field for sure. And it's going to be interesting, though. The Big Ten, obviously, with Ohio State, you know, is Michigan, you know, going to creep back in here? Belichick and Saban's assistants are, you know, very – and that was a great quote from Saban. Yeah, but like I said, you know, Florida tried with Muschamp. They're trying with Napier now. You know, the jury's out on if that's going to work out. Jim McElwain.
There was so much pressure on those guys, though, because they were crowned as, oh, these are Saban assistants.
Yeah.
Cignetti also didn't have that coming in. He, because of his background, it was more about, oh, he's coming over from James Madison and he was here first. Oh, well, yeah, he coached under Saban for a year, long time ago. It wasn't a big deal until all of a sudden Indiana started kicking the ever-loving crap out of people. And then they kept doing it. And then it was like, oh, and then of course, Kurt was talking from day one, and boy, he got real interesting real fast to the media, to the national.
What are the early feelings about Mendoza? Because obviously losing Rourke is a big blow. I mean, how do you feel?
I said this earlier, and this is nothing against Curtis Rourke, because he was fantastic. The dude played with a torn ACL for I don't even know how long. He was just unflappable. If he had had a better offensive line, maybe a little bit better running game, who knows what could have happened. I think Mendoza is a better physically skilled quarterback. I don't know how right here between the ears. Now, that makes a gigantic difference for a quarterback. But physically, he's got a deep ball, which Indiana, we didn't see that a lot last year. You know, long runs were usually racks run after the catch. We're going to see deep balls from this team. You have Elijah Surratt, recently named DeWalter Camp All-American wide receiver, Omar Cooper Jr., an improved offensive line, an improved running game. You're going to see an offense that is more dangerous, in my opinion. And the defense, they've got the triple crown of anchors, All-Americans, Mikhail Camara on the line. You've got Aiden Fisher at a linebacker, All-American, and you've got D'Angelo Pons in the backfield. I think this team is going to be better than it was last year. And it's going to be fun.
Yeah. And the schedule, how does it set up, you think?
The schedule sets up a lot different than it did last year. Last year, there has never been a schedule in the history of sports that set up more perfectly as far as each game getting more difficult. The level of difficulty went up almost every game throughout the season. This upcoming season, you know, you got the three non-con games, which are cupcakes, which they should obliterate those three. But you jump into Big Ten play, and you're going to have they're going to have the toughest three-game stretch of the season in games 4, 5, and 6. They play a top 25 Illinois team at home. Then they go on the road to take on an Iowa team that has added their quarterback from South Dakota State, who is a thrower. Then they go on the road again to Oregon. So that's a three-game stretch that I think Indiana, if they can go 2-1 in, and I think that they will, that will set them up for a great back half of the season. If they're 5-1 after the first six games, they're in great shape. They will have to go to Penn State. It will be the toughest game on the backside of that schedule, with road games at Maryland and Purdue, but home games against Michigan State, UCLA, and Wisconsin. If they can get to 5-1 on the first half, you know, 10-2 is very, very doable.
That sounds pretty good. Speaking of schedules, what did you think about the Indiana basketball non-conference schedule? And it's nice to see Kentucky back on the slate. Obviously, they're going to go to Rupp, right, this upcoming year. And
that's the only bad thing is that schedule is such a it's BS. It's horse crap. It's John Calipari still sticking it to Indiana from Arkansas because they kicked his ass when he was the number one team, and that's all there is to it. I don't like to get outside of the box of being non-partial, but I have no love lost for Calipari nor Kentucky. He's just a car salesman. But anyway, to answer your question, they go to Rupp. Then the next season, they play in Indianapolis. Then they go back to Rupp. Then they comes to Assembly Hall. So where it goes from there, I'm going to be curious. Do they then do the home and home split, or just home and home? What would you rather see, a home and home at Rupp and Assembly Hall? I think that America would rather see that.
It should be a home and home. And I think Mark Pope doesn't hold that grudge that Calipari held for them.
No.
That was a big issue when they stormed the court. I think Cal got all mad and thought it was a safety.
Of course he did, but he used it as an excuse. It's not the first time they've ever had a court stormed.
Yeah.
They were number one in the country. Indiana had just, they were coming off being crap. They were 6-25. What, 2 years before that?
Yeah.
They had zero D1 players before that. And so it was an embarrassing loss for the vaunted number one undefeated Kentucky Wildcats. But it's one of those great moments in sports, though.
Yeah.
And we used the call of Don Fisher for that on our show opening. And just what a great, great reaction. It went in.
And one of the great moments in sports, or one of the great moments in Indiana sports?
I'd say both, because Kentucky basketball. We're talking one of the top names in the sport. They were number one.
Indiana too. Don't sell your guys.
Right, but they were bouncing back from hard times. So to do that there when they're number one, the rivalry had been such and one of the best in college basketball. It should have been the reincarnation of Indiana returning to being Indiana. Unfortunately, that was just a hill.
What's the best rivalry in college basketball in your mind?
When it's going, Indiana and Kentucky, but that's not going right now because they haven't been playing, and Indiana has not been Indiana, but there's nobody going to tell me any different that back when from the 70s through the 80s into the 90s, think of those games. I mean, some
people in the Tar Heel State are going to say Duke.
Yeah. But you know what? And that all started because Mike Krzyzewski played for Knight, was an assistant to Knight, and they have ramped that up. What he did at Duke is crazy. But yeah, it has become the de facto probably the top series in college basketball now, but that was not the case back in the 70s and the 80s and started to be in the 90s, but it was allowed to morph to that. Had Indiana not dropped off.
Another one that's pretty solid, right? Kentucky Louisville.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how much interest there is really, though, if you get west of the Mississippi for Louisville and Kentucky. It is huge regionally, and it's a great rivalry because they're both great programs. What Pat Kelsey has done, whoo, dude, kicking ass. Comes in from the College of Charlestown. Nobody that's listening to this show right now had ever heard of Pat Kelsey, and including me. He comes in, little old man from an IU fan, a former IU fan. Steve Alford was his favorite player growing up. Indiana would have never given him a chance to be the coach. Neither would most other teams. The fact that Louisville found him, hired him, kudos. That's a great hire. We talk about how many, so many horrible hires there have been, especially for Indiana. I don't mean to crack on Indiana, but Archie Miller and Mike Woodson, back-to-back, were just flops, just gigantic. If this was the movie industry, the studio would shut that movie production company down. But I've always been amazed by, like, Xavier. What'd they make, like, five great hires in a row?
But then Sean Miller leaves him twice. He left him for Texas, you know. How jilted do you feel there? But you got Richard Pitino coming in. I think it's, you know, I did that column. I think it's going to be fascinating, though, when you look at some of these coaches like Kevin Willard and Richard Pitino going to the Big East and maybe seeing the tea leaves in terms of the rev share and how that's going to play out. Maybe not right away, but a few years down the road in terms of, you know, the advantage that they could have in getting blue chip recruits because, you know, if
but are they are those out, teams you know,
being
going
able
to get
pay more? What?
But are those teams going to get 20 million each? Why would a team like Xavier have 20 million to spend? They're not. They don't have that kind of a TV deal.
Yeah, but what's the Big East TV deal with Fox? It's still pretty good, and I think they've got something with CBS too. I mean, they have some money coming in. It would be interesting to see the financials on them. But say if it's even 10. But you're able to spend 75 to 80% of 10 as opposed to 15% of, you know, 20, that's still more money, you know? So if you think about it, I mean, it's still going to be an advantage for him. So it'll be interesting, like I said, you know, just to see how that all plays out. But I have a feeling that the whole NIL thing is going to, you know, they're not going to be able to, you know, contain that either with Dalat. I think that's kind of fool's gold. And, you know, Mike DeCourcy mentioned that in my column.
With Deloitte,
you
know, Are you talking about having to approve of the deals?
Yeah, exactly. I don't think.
Well, there's already lawsuits about it.
Exactly. I don't see how that's going to work. So,
but something has to be done. And I've never seen anything in my life that is such a runaway train as college athletics has become, and with no ability to slow this train down, much less stop it right now. And it's like every time we think about it, then you've got a state that every time we see some kind of a national thing coming in, well, Tennessee, well, they're going to set their own law that goes against that. So the states are causing as much problems as anybody because they keep changing everything. There has to be common ground, just like the lowly SEC has to buck up and sack up and go to a 9-game conference football schedule instead of panty waste 8 games so they can get 4 non-con games.
Hey, listen, they're not gonna do it until, you know, there's a change in the CFP process, because I don't think that they're very happy, because I just think that the whole human nature element of, you know.
Yes, the human nature is the rest of the world does not think the SEC is the greatest thing since sliced bread like the people of the SEC do. Not that they're not been great and done great things. They have. But just because of that does not mean you deserve what you don't deserve.
Hey,
did not deserve to be in the freaking CFP last year.
I've mentioned this on some of my podcasts too. I think the SEC the last couple of years has been down to where it was from, say, 2010 to 2022. It is not the same league, and that's going by my eye test and seeing it before and seeing it after. I think the transfer portal has leveled off the talent, and I think the schools in the Big Ten have found something in terms of attracting a lot of Southern players up there. You know, you take a look at Ohio State. I mean, how many of their stars are from Florida? I mean, ditto Michigan. You know what I mean? They've gotten the speed. They've gotten the athletes from down there. They've attracted them with more money, you know, through this current system. So I think it's leveled out a little bit, you know, definitely, you know, between the Big Ten and the SEC. I still think the SEC is a deeper conference, but I think that at the top, you know, the Big Ten has proven the last couple of years that they've had, you know, in terms of, and I even heard Paul Feinbaum on something yesterday saying, oh, you know, if Sarkisian was too loyal to Quinn Ewers, and if he plugged Arch Manning in this game, they would have definitely beaten Ohio State. I don't know if they would have definitely beaten Ohio State, Paul. I mean, Ohio State was
You can't say
loaded.
Anybody that says they would have definitely done this or done that.
Urban Meyer was telling us in January how many pros were on that Ohio State roster. I mean, he was, you know, he was laying it out for us. He said, you know, because I asked him about the 08 team, and he goes, no, I've never seen anything like this. And Florida's 08 team was pretty stacked. That had a bunch of about 8 or 9 NFL players. But that Ohio State team last year and what they still have, it's, yeah, ridiculous.
And I look at the SEC, and I think of some teams like Alabama, Ole Miss. You cannot lose to Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
You cannot lose at home to Kentucky. I don't care. That ended CFP talk for me for either of those teams. I don't care what else they do. You just can't be, you know, apples to apples and have that on your shoulder. It's like they expect people to
be Vanderbilt had a generational quarterback. I mean, Diego Pavia.
I know. Diego Pavia, they had a good year, but this is Alabama, dude. They gave up like, what, 40-something points to them?
I agree. Are you going to have Caleb DeBoer back on your show or no?
I'll reach out to him.
Well, I'm going to be up in Atlanta for SEC Media Days in a couple of weeks, so hopefully I'll
see Caleb. Please tell him I said hello.
And he'll remember me and say hello, because they had a rough first season. Yeah, for
he'll remember
they
me.
Didn't live up to Alabama standards. You always knew that the guy. Yeah. You always knew that.
You got to say hi to him for me. And you said, oh, he'll remember me. And I'm like, what about me?
I did say that I'll say hi to him for you.
Yeah. I'm kidding. I'm just messing with you.
Yeah. But, you know, hey, that was a tougher season because of, you know, the expectations. And you knew that the guy that was going to follow Saban was going to, you know, have to go through some, you know, growing pains and so forth. But he's got Ty Simpson, and he brought Grubb back from Washington. So we'll see how it plays out.
Dude, that is going to be huge. Where did Nick Sheridan go?
I think he's still there. I just think he might have gotten demoted from his role.
Well, the fact that he could get Ryan Grubb back, whoo, they were together at Washington, and then Grubb went to the Seahawks. So now not only do you have him back, you have him back with some NFL experience on top of that. So it's going to be a fun season. I cannot wait. What is the Florida basketball? How are they looking over? They kind of added the pieces they needed to add, right?
Yeah, and, you know, we had a chance to talk to Boogie Flan and Xavier Lee a couple of weeks ago. I was hoping we were going to see a workout, but it hasn't happened yet. But Todd was going to have us maybe come in and see a workout at some point. I'm hoping
it's not. Wait, what? You mean actually allow the media to see some kind of practice? Yeah. What is this you speak of?
Todd's great that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Todd's,
there's a lot of coaches that are like that.
Todd's pretty accessible in terms of, you
I
know.
I don't think it's the coach necessarily, because this is program fed at Indiana. It has been like that. It's almost as if you come, if you're a coach and maybe you've had open locker rooms before, I don't know if they're told, we don't allow the media in. Like, well, doesn't the coach make those decisions? I asked him at Huber's, which I'm sure he's forgotten by now, but I said, hey, coach, I said, man, it would be great if you just let us come watch a general practice or two sometimes, and I'll work on that. But I don't get why they're so secretive every day. It's like – the world is not going to crumble if we see somebody fumble the ball out of bounds. If, you know, it's, man, that's a little too sensitive for me. Rick Bozich is normally with us all the time. He would talk about Denny Crum, and I had the same experience when I was working in sports at the CBS station in Louisville. You just walk. You walk into practice. You didn't. There was no thinking. You just walked in. He would come over to you.
Yeah.
And ask, oh, you need something? You need me? Can you? That is, it's
this era, you know.
Bob Knight set the tone for that, less, I have to say.
I think less, you know, there's so many more writers now, and there's so many more people that, you know, you don't know.
That's a big part of the problem.
If you can trust them or not, and I get it, but yeah.
That is a legitimate issue. Too many, and nothing against them, but too many students, especially at IU, who has a media school, well, gee, there's got to be freaking 20 students at a particular presser. Well, that's 20 people that would have normally not been there. Then you add some fringe sites that are there now that didn't used to be there because of the advent of technology. So it used to be TV, radio, and newspapers, and that was pretty much it. But it has more than doubled since then, and it is more difficult. But at the same time, I think that you would hope that the people you work with get an understanding of trust and what you're will do and won't do. I try to never put like if I have players that are going to be going to IU on, I'm not going to put them in a bad situation. I'm not going to ask them questions about stuff that's just not good. That wouldn't do me any good.
Well, you know, maybe you could break a story. You never know.
Well, I'm talking about in generality.
But it's like I said, you know, you got to know when to pick your spots. You got to know when it's worth it, I think. And
absolutely, because sometimes you do have to ask the question.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's part of our job, I think. But at the same time, you know, I guess you kind of pick your spots with that and so forth and everything. But
it's says you can't trust
there you go. Can't trust us. Yeah, we're terrible.
What do you now see? What do you think of that? Now see, there you go. That's lumping everybody into one deal. You get some idiot who that here's another problem. People consider too many people real media when they're not, when they're very fringe. And you cannot keep them in the same. You're not comparing apples to apples there. So,
but you know, just think about it. If you're a fan and you wanted everything, sunshine and roses and so forth and everything like that. Like, what fun would that be? You know, or what would especially if things aren't going great. You know, I mean, you gotta question things. I mean, you know. I often say, I've said this all the time, all fans are entitled to its progress, but if it's going in the other direction, then sometimes you got to ask hard questions. I mean, it's just part of the job. And I think that's what we all do. And certainly we did that at the end of the Archie Miller era when it was, you know.
Well, because if you remember, the amount of questions were very limited. Therefore, the people who got to ask questions was very limited. I remember waiting for like three pressers in a row that I was getting a little pissed that I wasn't getting to ask because I knew what I was going to ask. And maybe that's why I wasn't getting it. But I think I just asked him. The last thing I remember asking him was the fact that he refused to ever switch lineups. Started the game and started the half. Didn't matter what was going on at the end of the half. It didn't matter if you had guys that were just really a hot hand. But nope, let's go back to doing. We're doing the same thing. And it's just, he was protected. I know that's their job, but these are men that are being paid millions of dollars by state schools. Hey, It's part of the job. The biggest part of their payday comes from media responsibilities.
Yeah. Well, I mean, winning games, I think that, you know. Well, but then you have to. Yeah. Then
I
you
meant
have
their
to,
contract.
Then you have to explain yourself when things don't go well. I mean, that's part of the deal. Like, you know, if you know.
Lucy, you have some explaining to do.
Exactly. You know what I mean? And that's all we, you know, if. Listen, I would say this in media because I've dealt with so many different coaches. If you're a stand-up guy and you take accountability and you own it, you know, that's the best way to go about it. But if you continue to fight it and complain and make excuses, blame the media and stuff, that's going to get you nowhere, in my opinion. You know, you just got to, you know, stand up and own it and take accountability for it and don't get personal with us or stern, you know, just, you know. Just, yeah, exactly. But you know
Mike,
that
Mike Woodson was really heading in that direction last year, not towards the media so much as the fans, the true fans thing that really got things started. But
exactly. You know, it's like, you know, if you're, you know, like, well, I get it. You know, they're competitors. You know, listen, Billy Donovan, who I cover too, I mean, when he was losing, it was miserable. You know, when he was winning, it was Disneyland, you know, but. I mean, there are certain guys that because they're such, you know, wired so much as competitors, they're going to take it out on you a little bit. And certainly Bob Knight was that way, right? Back in the day, too. Oh, you know?
If you disagreed with him,
yeah,
persona non gratis.
Yeah. And he was a guy that hated losing, probably, you know, but those are the kind of guys, too, that coaches look for, guys that hate losing.
I don't blame that.
Yeah.
Anything I've ever competed in, the anger and disappointment of and hurt of losing is far greater than the thrill, the feeling of victory. Yeah. Always. What's up next for you, brother?
I told you, vacation, man. I'm gonna be on the
That's right. I'm leaving Friday as well.
Where are you going?
Same spot. Not where you are, but not too far. I'll be at, okay. You know, the normal place where I normally go.
Good. We'll enjoy it. And it'll be, like I said, it'll be good to refresh. And then I'll have SEC football media days on the 15th. You'll have Big Ten media days when?
That's coming up on in the 20s. I think that's
out in Vegas. Are you going to go to Vegas for it or no?
You know what? I had planned on it, but I'm thinking not now because the hours just really screw things up too badly.
Yeah. You could have done Viva Las Vegas. Yeah.
Viva Las Vegas. Yes. Right. All right. Well, we'll look forward to
Viva Lost Wages. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Lost Wages. Viva Lost Wages. We'll hit you back up for SEC Media Days. Be very interesting. And I'll try to get.
I'll say hi to Kalen DeBoer.
Please do that. Tell him I'll be reaching out to him.
All right.
Okay, bro. We love you. We can't get enough of you, buddy. Everybody loves you and they appreciate you coming on, but not as much as I do.
All right. Take care, buddy.
Have a great one. Enjoy your vacation. Kevin Brockway joining us on The Hard Truth. Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back. Appreciate you guys being with us today. We're back tomorrow to do it again. Coach Griff, Bob Kravitz, and more. And until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.